An amber-tinted image of old studio buildings ripples like water. Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company. A latticework insignia, Legendary Pictures. An image of a man diving, Blinding Edge Pictures. Warner Brothers Pictures presents a Legendary Pictures, Blinding Edge Pictures production. Animated cave-like drawings illustrate a story.
Once, man and those in the water were linked. They inspired us. They spoke of the future. Man listened, and it became real. But man does not listen very well. Man's need to own everything led him deeper into land. The magic world of the ones that live in the ocean and the world of man separated. Through the centuries, their world and all the inhabitants of it stopped trying. The world of man became more violent. War upon war played out as there were no guides to listen to. Now, those in the water are trying again, trying to reach us. A handful of their precious young ones have been sent into the world of man. They are brought in the dead of night to where man lives. They need only be glimpsed, and the awakening of man will happen. But their enemies roam the land. There are laws that are meant to keep the young ones safe, but they are sent at great risk to their lives. Many do not return.
A water figure is attacked by a fierce wolf-like beast.
Yet still they try. Try to help man. But man may have forgotten how to listen.
White letters on a black background. Lady in the Water. The Perez de la Torre family watch a bearded man with receding hair and round-rimmed glasses check the cupboard underneath their sink.
My daughter says to be careful, Mr. Heap.
Ah. Well, it's some kind of ebb. Bug. It's very big. It's very hairy.
The homeowner and his daughters cower in a corner.
My other daughter says it's some kind of creature the devil made.
Tell her it's not a creature. There's no such thing as creatures, all right? You might want to turn away.
The man, Cleveland Heap, raises a broom and jabs the handle into the shadows under the sink. He jabs again, several times.
Sorry, this is taking so long!
Finally, Cleveland peers carefully into the gloom.
Ah! That's over. It's safe.
He stands wearily.
My daughter says thank you for protecting them.
A balding, middle-aged, bespectacled man carries luggage through a barred door.
Mr. Farber, I'm Cleveland Heap. Welcome to the Cove.
Mr. Heap!
A slim young girl in tight jeans, a crop top, and a Stetson swaggers towards Cleveland Heap and Mr. Farber.
Your new tenant?
This is Mr. Farber. He's in 13B. Now, Mr. Farber, this is Young Soon Choi. She lives with her mother in 8A. She's a student at the university. Young Soon, you don't know who's been swimming in the pool the last few nights, do you?
No, Mr. Heap.
Oh, by the way, thanks. I like that.
You're welcome. Mr. Heap loves learning. He doesn't want people to know. Mr. Heap, pool man looking for you. I tell him, you come soon.
Cleveland stutters at Mr. Farber.
Could you wait here just a moment, please?
I'm going to ask you something. You answer me straight. You guys been having parties in here? Bubble parties, bubble bath, everyone goes in skinny dipping?
No.
Those bubbles make the water very slick.
No.
The pool guy stares at him.
I'll trust you on that. But something is making this water like this.
There has been someone swimming at nighttime. I hear
splashing some nights. I left here yesterday afternoon. This filter was empty.
The pool repair guy pulls a long clump of hair out of the filter. Mr. Farber's on a stairwell with a young guy holding a dumbbell in his right hand.
You kind of look like maybe you could work out a little bit, right? I could give you a vein like that. I can make it look just like this, right? Most people say, hey, what's wrong with you, Reggie? Why are you only working out on one side of your body? Tell him it's like an experiment. I'm like a scientist.
His right arm is thick with muscle, but his left is normal sized.
This morning, I measured my bicep. 4.5-inch difference from one side to the other.
He works the dumbbell.
Take a guess at the difference between my thighs.
Well, Reggie.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Mean the new guy? We're talking science.
That's great. Here we go, mister. Here we go. Come on.
Cleveland and Farber head upstairs.
Don't hang out in the stairwell, Reggie. Please.
Okay.
All right. People might trip.
All right.
Reggie's harmless. He just wants to be special. He's working out only one side of his body. Did he tell you that?
They come to an open apartment door.
Hello, Mr. Leeds.
A man in his 50s sits in an armchair, barely moving. Cleveland and Mr. Farber carry on along the walkway.
He's been here forever.
A doormat with the silhouette of a cat.
Mrs. Bell, she takes in animals. Smart lady. You'd like her.
In another flat, a bunch of young guys are talking and smoking. One of them steps out and crushes his cigarette onto an ashtray on the walkway, then goes back inside, closing the door. Cleveland picks up the ashtray as he and Mr. Farber walk by.
This is you.
Cleveland opens the door of the flat next to the young guy's place, and Mr. Farber steps in.
There's no smoking inside. And there's no swimming after 7. I hope it's okay to ask. What brings you out here from the West Coast, Mr. Farber?
Well, I've been hired to be the local film and book critic for the paper.
They flew you all the way out here for that?
They did.
Well, you must be very good.
Farber looks slightly uncomfortable, and Cleveland hands him his keys. Farber goes back inside, closing the door of 13B behind him. Night has fallen over the Cove, a modern, horseshoe-shaped apartment complex with an outdoor swimming pool in the centre. In his caretaker's cottage, Cleveland checks his messages.
Mr. Heap, Betty Penn again. I smell something awful coming from the upstairs apartment. I think someone may have died, and the body is decomposing. I know I said this last week, but...
Cleveland reaches up to a high shelf, then settles down in an armchair in front of the TV. The dark sky above the Cove is mottled with thick, grey clouds. Cleveland's fallen asleep in front of the TV. He wakes with a start and checks his watch, then rubs the back of his head and hauls himself out of his chair. Cleveland trudges over to the TV and turns it off. He walks to the sink, turns on a tap, and leans over to splash water onto his face. Behind him, something splashes in the pool outside, and Cleveland looks up. The water in the swimming pool bubbles and ripples as Cleveland comes outside holding a flashlight. He walks to the edge of the pool and shines the torch around the darkness. Cleveland glances down and picks up a small neck chain, which he puts down on a sun lounger. He walks around the edge of the pool with the flashlight pointing down at the concrete floor. Suddenly, a woman lunges out of the pool, grabs the necklace, and disappears back beneath the surface.
Hey! I saw you! I I saw you!
Cleveland scans the dark pool with his flashlight.
Come out of that pool right now! Hey!
He hesitates at the edge.
I'm gonna wait. Hey!
Cleveland puts down his flashlight.
Hey!
He tentatively takes a step into the pool.
Come on out now. It's not safe. Oh, come on out. This is not funny.
He wades deeper and further into the pool.
Please stop.
Cleveland ducks underneath the water. He bursts up through the surface. Cleveland flounders and gulps in some air, then dives under again. He swims to the edge of the pool and quickly climbs out. Cleveland makes to run, but slips over onto his back. He lies dazed, then rolls over back into the water. Cleveland reaches up and grabs the edge of the concrete, but slowly loses his grip and slides under the water. The surface of the pool gently ripples and the screen fades to black. Cleveland's eyes flicker open. He's lying on his bed and stares at water droplets scattered across his wooden bedroom floor. Cleveland lifts his head and looks up at a pale-skinned, red-haired young woman staring back at him. Cleveland looks across his dimly lit room, then swings his legs off the bed and sits up. He stares at the floor, then his eyes creep across to the young woman, who sits sideways on his couch, with her knees drawn up.
Did you pull me out?
The woman, who wears a long shirt exposing her slim, bare legs, nods faintly.
Where are you from?
The Blue World.
Is that an apartment?
Do you feel an awakening?
I'm sorry.
It will feel like pins and needles inside.
Cleveland stays on his bed, a frown on his face.
It is not you.
Cleveland, who wears black trousers and a loose black shirt over a khaki t-shirt, shakes his head.
It's light. You really shouldn't be here. I'm kind of old-fashioned that way. I don't even know your name.
My name is Story.
I didn't mean for you to tell me.
He stops, then stares into space, blinking thoughtfully.
Why am I not stuttering?
What?
He rubs his mouth.
Hello, Story. My name is Cleveland.
From the cliffs. That is what your name means.
Where did you learn that?
From my studies.
He nods.
I promise that I will not get you into trouble. You can go.
I am scared. I will wait here with you, Cleveland.
Why are you scared?
Story gazes blankly at Cleveland, who looks away. A tear trickles down Story's cheek. He sighs, then rubs his hand across his brow.
You can wait here. A little bit, until you feel not so scared.
He looks over at Story, who lowers her eyes.
Are you okay?
She closes her eyes and turns away as though in pain. Cleveland steps towards her.
Oh my God, you're just a kid.
He stands and watches her. A little later, he's sitting on the couch. Story lies across his lap with her head resting on his chest. She's asleep. Cleveland opens his eyes to look up at the ceiling. A little dazed, he glances round the room, then rests his hand on Story's shoulder. He rests his other hand on one of her slender legs, closes his eyes and sighs. He shifts in an effort to get up.
It's time to go. Sorry.
She remains nestled against him. Cleveland rests his head back.
Okay. I think you need some fresh air. I'm just gonna take you outside. I'm gonna put you in one of the pool chairs. I'm gonna get you some coffee. And then you can wake up. And I'll walk you home.
He pats her shoulder. Story doesn't move.
Tell me, who in the world are you anyway?
North.
What?
Cleveland leans closer to listen, but Story doesn't respond.
Okay, come on. Here we go.
He picks her up and carries her across the room towards the door to his cottage. He steps outside. As Cleveland carries Story across a veranda towards the chairs and tables beside the pool, he pauses and listens. Cleveland peers into the shadowy undergrowth. He shifts as though to walk on. Frozen to the spot, a fearful Cleveland stares ahead into a ghostly mist, in which the silhouette of a creature about the size of a wolf appears. The creature treads closer. As Cleveland slowly turns and steps away from the pool, Story lifts her head and looks over her shoulder. Eyes wide with terror, Cleveland races back towards his cottage with Story in his arms. She points to the water as the creature gains on them. They make it inside. Cleveland talks to a guy from Animal Protection.
It's sort of hairy, but matted, like clumps, you know? And it was kind of green.
You say green?
Yeah. I thought so. Matted is not right. It was flat and thicker than hair.
A blade of grass.
Like this. Flat and this kind of a color. And is this not helping you at all?
Well, forget about its hair for a second. It's obviously some dumb animal who muddied himself. About how tall is it?
No.
Is it a Great Dane?
No, sir. I mean, are there any wolves in this area? Hyenas?
Yeah, Jack, this is Philadelphia. Where do you think you're living?
Sprinklers come on.
Sorry. Something keeps setting up the sprinklers.
Well, I'll look around the forest and check behind the dumpsters and stuff. An animal that size, like the one you're describing, doesn't just walk around not be seen. There's nowhere for a dumb big animal to hide.
The SPCA man glances about, then picks up an empty cage and walks away. Something unseen moves in the long grass and steals towards the cottage. Inside, Story grips a blanket to her chest and steps quickly across the living room. Frightened, she stops and looks about, then sinks into an armchair where she hangs her head. She pulls her long auburn hair over her shoulders, then looks up, nervously, and listens. Story stands up, releases her blanket and creeps through the kitchen towards a shower cubicle. She holds out her arm and feels the dripping water droplets on her fingers, then quickly turns the shower on and steps aside. She places her shirt folded on a stool, then steps under the shower. She bears a scratch on her lower leg. Outside, Cleveland steps up to Young Soon, who's studying, as she sunbathes by the pool.
Got a lot of homework, huh?
University gives many pages of reading. What they think, I have no social life? I got more books for you.
Could you look up the word narf for me?
She eyes him curiously.
It's an Eastern bedtime story, Mr. Heap. I do not remember it. My great-grandmother used to tell it when she was alive.
He shakes his head.
Bedtime story? What's the story?
I do not remember.
She holds out a couple of books to him.
How about your mother?
Cleveland stands in the doorway of Mrs. Choi's apartment while Young Soon pulls her mother out of the kitchen.
Ah, hello, Mrs. Choi. Hello.
She wants to know who told you this word.
Just a friend. I don't know her very well.
She said that her grandmother used to tell this story like a prayer, like it was true. She said that she knew someone who knew someone who saw one.
Saw one what?
뭘 봤대요?
바다의 요정.
A narf, the bedtime story says, is a sea nymph.
Cleveland steps forward.
What happens in the story, please?
Mrs. Choi's gone.
Oma!
Young Soon drags her out of the kitchen again. Cleveland backs up to the doorway and smiles nervously at the diminutive Mrs. Choi.
In the bedtime story, she must be seen by the one human chosen for her.
This 요정폰 선택 인간은 이렇게 하나 도구가 되고.
This person is called the vessel. Seeing the knife will awaken something in the chosen one. If she's successful in this,
자기 세계로 돌아가게 되고.
She will return with the great eaglon, a giant eagle, and become free. She won't tell me more. She said, "Why can't I be like my older sister? She married a dentist."
Cleveland, who's clutching his shoes to his chest, removes his spectacles and sighs. Cleveland returns to his cottage and sets his bag down on a table. He begins to pace.
Story?
Story's wet, pale legs step into view.
Cleveland.
Cleveland stares at her.
Story, could you put something back on?
Story picks up the folded shirt and slips it on. Cleveland, with his hands on his hips, hangs his head and waits.
Are you here to meet someone, see someone in this building?
He looks up at her for an answer.
Is somebody supposed to see you?
He holds one hand out, then lets his arm drop by his side. He adjusts his spectacles and steps up to the shower and turns it off.
It is a writer.
She stands facing Cleveland. They're only inches apart.
Do you know his name?
Story shakes her head.
Do you know what he looks like?
She shakes her head again.
Do you know if it's a woman or a man?
Story shakes her head. Cleveland sighs and shakes his.
Is this something that you want to tell me?
Story shakes her head and looks down, avoiding his eyes.
Is this person writing something important?
Story looks up at him and nods. The cottage is set back from the swimming pool in long, overgrown grass.
When do you have to leave?
I can leave tonight if I meet this person.
I'm gonna help you get home.
Thank you, Cleveland.
She gazes into his eyes.
I have to go.
He steps back and turns away. Cleveland at Mr. Farber's door.
Hello, I wanted to ask you something about your work. Your critic work. How's it going?
I'm seeing a romance film tonight. Not my cup of tea.
So you haven't written anything yet?
No, I haven't written anything for some time. You were right about that one tenant. I spoke with Mrs. Bell. We got along. She's very good with animals. You know, she wrote a book.
Mrs. Bell.
Mr. Heath, I will be taking the cat in direct.
Don't worry, Mrs. Bell.
A butterfly lands on Mrs. Bell's shoulder.
Look at you. Why, there's a lot of butterflies around this building. Strange behavior for them. They're not usually so trusting.
I understand that you're a writer, Mrs. Bell.
Now, where'd you hear such things?
Maybe I read your book.
That'd be quite a trick. It's been out of print for 20 years.
20 years? So you haven't written anything recently?
Mr. Farber has been speaking out of turn.
A young boy, Joey's having breakfast.
Look at the serial character's picture, Dad. It looks just like Aunt Sylvia's eyes when she found out everybody hated her fruit bowl painting.
I need a 9-letter word for inhuman form.
You'll figure it out, Dad. You know, the color on this box looks just like the colors of your car, Dad. Maybe we should take your car and go visit Aunt Sylvia.
Incarnate!
Mr. Joey points at Cleveland, who's fixing a window.
Well, you're very good with those word puzzles, Mr. Derry.
Mm-hmm. He's a grandmaster level. I'm gonna be just like him.
So you like words a lot, huh?
I adore them.
Are you writing anything, Mr. Derry? A book, maybe?
No, I'm afraid my skills are limited to crossword puzzles.
Cleveland's in the smoker's apartment.
That's some serious reekage, man. You don't even speak English anymore.
What, reekage? Damn straight it's English, the state of reek.
There's no reekage, man. Some toker just like us made it up somewhere, and here you are speaking it.
Let's make up a witty phrase. It'll become famous.
It needs to be on some T-shirt or something, you ass.
No, it doesn't. It just catches on. People just start saying it.
Blim blam.
What? Blim blam? Somebody already said that.
Cleveland.
Gentlemen, I don't suppose any of you have written anything lately? An essay or something? Something important?
No essays here, my man.
Cleveland nods.
Okay, stop putting your clothes in the garbage disposal and stop smoking!
He glares at the 5 scruffy men slouched in front of him, then leaves. One of them takes a drag from a cigarette.
Baby's on the half tip.
He points after Cleveland, a couple from high five.
Oh, snap!
Yeah!
There you go! There you go!
Mr. Heath! She told me a little bit more of the story before she threw a cushion at me.
Young Sue. You're not writing anything, are you? Paper, maybe?
Writing? No, Mr. Hip. This semester, all multiple choice courses. Young Sun is not stupid. She told me about a bad guy in story. These creatures are called scrunts. They're meant to kill an off when she is out of the water. They can lay completely flat. Their back is covered in grass. My great-grandmother said that's why man never sees them. They will appear as a bump in the lawns.
Back at the caretaker's cottage, Story, wearing one of Cleveland's shirts, is wandering about gathering things of interest to her. She picks up a fountain pen and looks at it, then a glass paperweight, which she places on top of a little store of objects that she's huddling to her breast. Story, who has the unearthly beauty of a pre-Raphaelite muse, glides about the room, wide-eyed with childlike innocence. She spots something on a high shelf, reaches up, and takes down a black leather-bound notebook. She opens it. Cleveland's walking down a corridor in the basement of the apartment complex. He greets brother and sister, Vic and Anna Ran.
Vic, Anna.
Mr. Heap, the light over my desk is still not working.
I promise I'll get to it. How's the writing?
Slow.
You look tired, Mr. Heath.
How long have you been writing, Vic?
6 months.
Cleveland stopped walking.
What? I should finish, right?
It just sits on his desk. My brother's scared. He'll do anything to get out of writing. See this? It's the third load of laundry he's done this week.
Vic chucks his laundry on the floor.
I can fix that light now, if you want.
Cleveland turns his back to them and hurries on. A little later, he carries a stepladder into a study in Vic and Anna's apartment. He sees a manuscript on a desk. On the front sheet, "Do not read" is written and underlined. Cleveland sighs frustratedly, then erects the stepladder and climbs up it to unscrew a light fitting over the desk. He jumps down, the force of which has turned over the front page of the manuscript. Cleveland leans closer to read the title, "The Cookbook" by Vic Rann.
A cookbook. Oh, this has gotten us.
He closes his eyes and grins.
Silly.
Cleveland steps up to the doorway of the laundry room where Vic and Anna are arguing.
That's not how you fold.
Mr. Heap, tell her to stop annoying me.
I fixed the light.
I'll make you dinner, Mr. Heap, thank you.
You both cooks?
Who, him? He can't cook. He's banned from the kitchen.
Cleveland walks out, only moments later to return.
Wait a minute, I understand something. I'm sorry, my ladder accidentally bumped into your desk. I ended up seeing the title of what it is you're writing. It's like the cookbook.
I know, it's a bad title, right? It's actually, you know, just my thoughts on all the cultural problems and thoughts on leaders and stuff. I don't know who's going to want to publish the thing.
Cleveland stares at him.
That is not how you fold.
Vic pretends to hit out at his sister.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland steps into the cottage and finds Story huddled on top of his couch, clutching the notebook to her.
Your thoughts are very sad.
She looks at him and shakes her head.
Most are of one night. A night a man entered your home when you were not there.
Cleveland sets his bag down.
He stole many things and killed your wife and children. That is when you stopped being happy.
Cleveland sits down on the stool by the shower.
You were a doctor. I am very sorry for you. You believe you have no purpose. You help all that live here.
Anybody can do this job, Story.
You have a purpose. All beings have a purpose.
Cleveland's shoulders are slumped and his head is bowed. He shifts and steadies himself.
I know who you are. And I think that I've found your vessel. You know what I'm talking about, right?
He steps closer to her. She nods.
He's outside. Do you need to see him alone, or does he just need to see you?
Story's eyes are wide and blank as she stares at him. Cleveland puts his hands on his hips and shakes his head.
Cover yourself up.
She does so as Cleveland goes to open the door.
Hey.
Mr. Heap, I know I sent in that form.
I
gave it to you on the stairs.
Vic steps in.
My sister's all angry at me now.
Well, I'll check again.
He gestures to Story.
By the way, this is my friend, Story.
Vic turns round and looks at her.
Hi.
Story lifts her head to stare at him calmly. As she does, her eyes widen and her mouth opens as though alerted to something. Quickly, she looks away and blinks. Cleveland retrieves a document from a shelf.
Yeah, you were right. Here it is.
Vic's still gazing at Story.
Great.
He turns round to Cleveland, who steps towards him.
You all right? You look a little...
Cleveland studies Vic's face.
I'm feeling a little funny. It's nothing.
Is it a pins and needles kind of feeling?
Cleveland holds his hand to his heart.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Maybe you should go lie down.
Cleveland nods and pats his shoulder. Vic turns round to gaze at Story once again.
nice meeting you.
I'm so very happy we saw each other.
Vic continues to stare at her, then turns away, opens the door and leaves. Cleveland closes it behind him. Cleveland checks his pager, then covers his eyes with his hands.
You don't have to leave right now.
She shakes her head.
I have to go finish a couple of things. I'll be back. Is that okay?
Your words are very beautiful. Your heart is very big.
Cleveland strides up to her and, leaning down in front of her, he stares at the floor.
No one knows about my family here. Please, do not bring it up again.
He takes his black notebook from her and clutches it to him, then straightens up and replaces the book on the top of the shelf.
Coming.
Sorry I'm late, Mrs. Bubchuk. It's been a long day.
Come on.
Cleveland steps into the apartment.
Listen, he's on the toilet. He's been having some gas issues. Don't tell him I told you.
I thought the toilet was broken. That's why I came.
He may just be looking in the mirror. I mean, he's got this growth on his ass. Don't tell him I told you. Honey, Cleveland's here. He's come to fix the toilet.
Tell him I had it fixed already. I called the plumber this morning. Don't let it hurt his feelings.
Right.
That's okay. I should come when you call. It's my job.
Cleveland's with Story.
What if that thing's out there? It'll try to get you?
There are laws. It will be safe. I'm allowed to leave this night.
It's dark and gloomy about the pool as the sprinklers suddenly burst into life. Cleveland and Story sit on the floor in his shadowed living room.
How long do you think?
It is time. You must not watch.
Am I not allowed to watch you leave?
She looks at him.
I won't watch.
Thank you for letting me wear your beautiful shirt.
You keep it.
He smiles and nods at her, then stands and takes her hand to help her up. Cleveland sighs, then opens his front door. The pool is still. The lounges dotted around it are deserted, and the apartment building is in darkness, except for some nightlights dotted along the corridors. Cleveland steps outside and walks towards the pool. Story treads along the other side of the pool. Cleveland stoops to pick up a discarded can from the flat concrete surface surrounding the edge of the pool. Story raises her eyes towards the sky as a gentle breeze rustles through her hair and shirt. Story stands alone at the edge of the pool, as though waiting, while Cleveland withdraws from her, returns to his cottage, and closes the door. He stands with his back to the door in contemplation. Cleveland wearily ascends a staircase to the second floor of the apartment building and goes to empty a large metallic bin. He repeats this operation on the third and then the fourth floor, where bins are parked at the same spot. Cleveland swings round and looks over the railing to catch a fleeting glimpse of Story far below.
What happened?
Her legs are badly scratched.
Okay. Hey, calm down. Calm down. How'd you get those scratches? Did the eagle come? Did something go wrong? Story? Story! Was it that dog again?
Creature bearing jagged teeth smashes through the glass in the door to snap at Story. Cleveland takes her hand and drags her up the stairs.
What's happening? I thought it was going to be safe!
They peer over the railing from an upper floor. Cleveland turns to a weakened Story.
Oh, your face doesn't look right. Are you okay?
Anna Ran appears at Vic's bedroom door.
Mr. Heap is here. He has a friend. She's beautiful. She's not feeling that well. So she's lying down in my room.
Why is she here?
Well, she got sick in the stairwell downstairs.
She rolls her eyes.
She's wearing no clothes under his shirt. Blim, blam.
Vic frowns.
Mr. Heap is a player.
Vic, who's olive-skinned with dark eyes and hair, steps out of his room and looks curiously at Cleveland, who's leaning against a bedroom door.
I hope it's all right. It's fine. Do we need to take her to a hospital?
Oh, no. That's...
Fine.
Thank you. No, she just needs some rest.
She can stay here as long as she needs to.
You started writing again?
Yeah.
I'll be right back, okay?
He leaves and knocks on Mrs. Choi's apartment door.
Ah, hello. Mrs. Choi, is Young Soon at home?
No home.
Oh, unbelievable.
As he walks away, the apartment door reopens and Mrs. Choi appears in her dressing gown.
Hey! Hey!
She holds out a phone to Cleveland. He blows her a kiss.
Yeah, hello?
Mr. Heap?
Where are you?
At a club. Don't tell my mother. She thinks I'm at a dance class.
Okay. What happens if a narf gets scratched?
I don't know. Put my mother on. I'll ask her.
Cleveland sighs.
Ma!
This is Choi.
Ma!
He holds out the phone to Mrs. Choi. Cleveland steps into the apartment after Mrs. Choi, then rapidly backtracks onto the corridor outside with his hands raised defensively. He paces.
Hey!
Thank you.
He takes the phone.
Oh, she doesn't look happy.
She says the story her grandmother told said a scrunt has a poison that kill narfs. But she said narfs can protect themselves. They are given a mud called key that cures them. They keep it where they live.
Okay. All right, now, you said that the eagle comes to take them back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, what stops this green thing from attacking them when the eagle comes?
You're funny, Mr. Heap.
Yeah,
you really thought about this. Put my mom on.
With his back to her, Cleveland holds the phone out once again to Mrs. Choi. She returns to her apartment with it, while Cleveland paces up and down the corridor. Finally, Mrs. Choi reappears in the doorway and holds the phone out to Cleveland.
Hey!
Yeah? Yes?
She said only a rogue scrunt will break the law of that night because most scrunts are afraid.
Afraid of what?
Tatuchik, they are the law keepers in this bedtime story. Her grandmother said there are three of them, but they are called one name, Tatuchik. They live in the trees. They are said to look like monkeys. No one knows for sure because no one who has seen them has lived. The legend says that they were born so evil that they killed their parents on the night they were born. The fear of them has kept justice in the blue world for centuries. Bye, Mr. Heap.
With a dazed expression, Cleveland drops his arm and Mrs. Choi takes the phone back.
Thanks.
The pool is eerily still. Corridor lights from the massive Cove apartment building are reflected in its mirror-like surface. Cleveland plunges into the pool and swims to a grill at the bottom.
Given a mud called key that cures them. They keep it where they live.
Cleveland studies the large grill, then returns to the surface for air. He draws a breath, then plunges again to the bottom. Swimming in just his shorts, he shines a torch through the grill, then takes a hold of it and hoists it aside. His light illuminates an underwater tunnel. The roots of plants and trees poke out of the sides like gnarled, spindly fingers. Cleveland swims along it to a heavy-set door, which he pushes open. He enters a cavern and shines his torch upon a circular, segmented chart of drawings on a heavily cracked wall. Upturned glasses held in place by small rocks and a collection of other shining objects like a knife and a watch strap sit in the wall cavities. Cleveland swims through the gloom towards one of these shelves. He picks up one of the little rocks, then turns a glass over. Air bubbles escape from the glass. Beneath it is a small, round, dark clump of key mud. Cleveland swims through the murky darkness towards the door with it. He grips a handle coiled like a snake and pulls. The handle breaks away. The clump of key mud, resembling a lump of coal in the gloom, slips from Cleveland's hand and sinks to the bottom. Cleveland pulls at the door with his bare hands, desperately trying to lever it open and failing. Cleveland looks around. He returns to one of the wall cavities, picks up a pen, quickly unscrews the nib and end, and discards the spring and the ink cartridge. Then he picks up an upturned glass, pops the pen funnel in his mouth, pokes it up inside the glass, and breathes in some oxygen from the air pocket at the top of the glass. He releases the glass and swims to another cavity. He shines his light on the captured trinkets lying there and spots a piece of cutlery which he picks up. Cleveland returns to the door and starts to hack around the edge of it with a knife. He hauls the huge door open, then, with numerous air bubbles escaping from him, he quickly swims out of the cavern. His torch pierces through the darkness and falls upon the clump of key mud. The surface of the pool shimmers. Cleveland bursts through it. A little light shines from Cleveland's cottage. His high-heeled sandals step along the concrete edge of the pool and pause by a wet patch. There's a knock on Cleveland's door.
My mom figured out I was at a club. She made me come home. She'd tell me more of the story. Why are you wet?
That's apartment business.
He conceals the mud.
Listen, Mr. Heap. My mother thinks of you as a stranger. You have to make her see you as a child, innocent. Then she would tell you the bedtime story. There is a reason the rules might be broken. 1,000 Knopfs is about a rare Knopf who comes once in a generation of a Knopfs who is called the Madam Knopf. Her vessel is important. This vessel will cause change. But it is the Madam Knopf herself that is truly the key. She's considered a queen to her people. Her return would be seen as a great inspiration. A scrunt will do anything to kill a Madam Knopf, even forget his fears of the Tartutic. You might break the rules for that, Mr. Heap.
Will she know that she's a Madam Knopf?
No. That is moral of a bedtime story. No one is ever told who they are. I think we are linked. It's more than just a story to me, too. I actually want to believe it.
She turns to go.
Goodbye, Mr. Heap.
Story, still wearing a cream shirt of Cleveland's, raises herself to sit on the edge of a bed. She holds her cupped palms up as Cleveland carefully lays the clump of key mud in them.
You've saved my life again.
He leans towards her.
You made that room. The cracks that I saw, is that room supposed to collapse eventually?
I'm not allowed to speak of the blue world.
Well, the door needs a little work.
He smiles gently.
I noticed that you took things from the apartment that people left around the pool. That's how I saw you. You were taking something off of a chair.
He grins and hangs his head, then looks up.
I think I might know why this grunt needs to get you so bad.
Why did he break the rules tonight?
As it turns out, I think that you're someone very important to everyone.
He looks at her in earnest. Shrouded in the mist, the silhouette of a wolf-like creature, a scrunt, loiters in the long grass by the pool, waiting. The sprinklers switch on. Story creeps up to an oval wall mirror in Anna Rand's bedroom and stares at her frightened reflection. She turns quickly to see Cleveland come in.
I tried to tell them about you. I don't know if I did the right thing. I'm not sure how they're going to react.
I trust you. I believe you are here to protect me.
She holds his head in her hands and stares into his eyes.
Is the key working?
Yes, thank you. If it is true that I am, he will keep coming after me. I will not be safe until
Tartuta comes.
She holds his gaze, then releases her hands. Cleveland turns round as Anna enters the room. Her eyes are fixed on Story. Vic stands in the doorway, arms folded.
My mother said she saw a ghost once in the basement. I was the only one who believed her.
She's not an apparition, Anna.
Vic steps up to Story.
I don't know who you are, but you did something to me. My thoughts.
He crouches down before her.
Everything became clearer. The fears that were muddling my thoughts just went away. I can hear myself.
Do you wish to know your future?
She gazes down at Vic, who nods.
A boy in the Midwest of this land will grow up in a home where your book will be on the shelf and spoken of often. He will grow up with these ideas in his head. He will grow into a great orator. He will speak, and his words will be heard throughout this land and throughout the world. This boy will become leader of this country and begin a movement of great change. He will speak of you and your words. Your book will be the seeds of many of his great thoughts. It will be the seeds of change.
Anna kneels beside Vic, listening.
The cookbook?
The Perez de la Torre sisters leap into the pool. Day, the pool is busy, and the sun loungers are occupied. Cleveland sits on a sofa in Mrs. Choi's apartment, in front of an enormous plate of cookies and a big mug of milk. Mrs. Choi, who stands beside Young Soon, stares at him suspiciously. Cleveland picks up a cookie and nibbles on it. He picks up his mug of milk and takes a slurp. It dribbles over his moustache. He goes to wipe his moustache with a napkin, but Young Soon discreetly shakes her head. Instead, Cleveland grins sheepishly at Mrs. Choi.
Could you tell her that I was interested in hearing more of the story?
얘기 좀 더 듣고 싶대요.
Mrs. Choi is still staring at Cleveland, but now with a bewildered, mildly bemused look. Cleveland sits back in the sofa and claps his legs. Young Soon looks at him and gestures her head to one side. Taking his cue, Cleveland allows his head to drop down onto the sofa. He raises his legs, so that now he's lying on it. He grips his hands between his legs and looks up with a childish expression.
Tell her it's a beautiful story.
아름다운 이야기래요, 엄마.
Are there any parts that might be good to hear?
He waggles his leg from the knee down. A smile begins to crack across Mrs. Choi's face. She starts to laugh. Cleveland hammers on a window to Anna and Vic's apartment and beckons Anna to the door. She opens it.
How is she?
The medicine's helping her. I told her to stay under the shower. She does much better with water.
I need to talk with her. And Vic should be there too.
Story sits in the shower.
I told him to wait right outside. I'll tell him what you have to say.
Tell her I know that she is not allowed to tell about her world, but maybe I could ask some questions and she can just say if it's right or wrong.
You know what I did when I was a little girl and me and my girlfriends would get in big trouble? My mom always wanted to know what happened, but I was like, I can't tell all my friends. So she came up with this way of me telling her things without talking. She would say, touch your ear or something, if the answer is yes. So I would, and then she would know certain things, but I didn't really feel like I told him my friends.
Anna sits facing the shower.
It was cheating, I know, but it made me feel better.
She waits.
We're ready.
So, in this bedtime story, the Narf has come to a preordained place. She must leave from this same spot. This eagle, the great Eatlon, coming to take her back, is really very important. And here's the good stuff. There are humans with powers that can help her. And these people have been unconsciously drawn to live near the vessel. Now, these humans don't know who they are, and they always appear in the story earlier.
Are there humans with powers that can help you but don't know who they are?
Story touches her ear.
That's a yes!
Cleveland claps.
They've got weird names. A symbolist, a guardian, and a guild. Ask her if that's right.
Story clasps her arms and points.
You want something?
Story points again.
One of them. Vic. Mr. Heap. Mr. Heap is one of them.
Story gestures a reply.
Which one? Guild, guardian?
Story touches her nose.
She thinks Mr. Heap is the guardian.
I was told that there's a symbolist. An interpreter who can read signs and clouds and other forms. He will interpret messages from the universe if problems should arise.
Do you know who the symbolist or interpreter is? That's a no.
And I was told that there is a guild whose many hands will combine to help. Does she know who they are?
There is a guild or something. They're supposed to help with their hands. That's another no.
Vic has joined him at the doorway.
All right, there's one other. I don't know if it's worth mentioning. It's not in the stories all the time. It's a human, usually a female, so full of hope that they can awaken the life force in all things. Now, that one is called the healer. Now, you can tell that they're in the story because butterflies are drawn to the healer.
Cleveland freezes as the penny drops.
The last one's a healer. You don't know any of these people, do you?
Story holds out her pale hands and opens them out like a book.
Reading. A book. Learning.
Story touches her hair.
She thinks it has to be learned.
Is the eagle going to come back for her?
Story raises her fist and holds up one finger.
Only one last time. Mr. Heap, you know the people in this building. You have to find them.
Cleveland knocks on the door of number 13B, Mr. Farber's apartment.
What is it? You know, these walls are paper thin. I can hear all that bloody noise downstairs like they were in my kitchen. Can you do anything about that?
Cleveland shakes his head.
Of course not. What is it you want anyway?
Well, I had a question. You're an expert on plots, right? You know who's going to do what in a book or a movie, even at the beginning, yes?
There is no originality left in the world, Mr. Heath. That is a sad fact I've come to live with.
Well, if there was a mystery, and a guy had to figure out who some people were, like he had to find a symbol guy, someone who can figure out messages, and a guild of people who are going to be important at the end as a group, how would you figure that out?
Farber stares at him.
The symbol person should be simple. Look for any character who was doing something mundane but required analysis. Someone who was skilled at puzzles.
Joy, you can't have cereal for lunch.
This picture on the cereal box is supposed to make you feel happy. I feel sad like that time you forgot to pick me up at school.
Joey, Mr. Heap appears disquieted. Can you give us a moment alone?
Sure, Dad.
Cleveland's with Mr. Jury.
As for the guild, look for any group of characters that are always seen together and have seemingly irrelevant and tedious dialogue that seems to regurgitate forever.
And you just sit around and talk about nothing?
We talk about serious issues. On occasion.
Cleveland's chatting to the smokers in their apartment.
Talked about Martin Luther King at the Tequila Hut Tuesday night.
His flatmates nod and smoke.
You talked about that?
This is the writer's way, of establishing characters who will be important further in the story. Is there anything further I can assist you with during my nap time?
No. No, Mr. Farber. Thank you.
Farber closes the door in his face. Cleveland breaks into a smile. Story sitting on the floor of the shower cubicle wrapped in a blue towel. Cleveland leads a troop of people into the bathroom. The smokers peek their heads into the shower.
Story, these young men are the guild. And Mr. Dury. Mr. Dury?
He brings Mr. Dury forward.
Mr. Dury is the interpreter. And there's one other person. Mrs. Bell, could you come in here, please? There's Mrs. Bell. The healer.
Mrs. Bell peers in.
Story wants to go home, and she can't. But tomorrow night is her last chance. Mr. Dury, please step forward.
Mr. Heap, you're not stuttering.
Yes, I know. It's only around her.
He points at Story.
Now, the interpreter will tell us what to do if something should go wrong. He will use an instrument specific to him to interpret.
He hands a newspaper to Mr. Dury.
Try it, Mr. Dury. Let's just see what happens. I think that there's a message in there for us.
Mr. Dury looks dubious as he studies the crossword puzzle.
Well, nine letters across is the word essential. And it touches 27 down, which is scheme. Essential scheme.
Yes.
Well, those were the first two words that I deciphered in this puzzle, and I thought that was... I thought that was weird. Mm.
Frowning, Mr. Jerry looks at another clue.
There's a word that seems out of place to me.
Yes.
It's a six-letter word for get-together. Soiree.
Soiree could mean party. How does a party help us?
Well, I guess I thought that, a party is interesting because this thing out there is an animal, and it probably has a very keen sense of smell. Why is everyone staring at it?
Go on, Mr. Dirk, go on.
Humans have a pungent smell to animals, so I thought that maybe everyone gathered together would confuse him, and he wouldn't be able to distinguish her from amongst all of us.
Wow.
Does that sound right?
He's hearing the voice of God through a crossword puzzle.
We're just playing here, right?
Mm-hmm. Wait. I don't think that the great Eatlon will land in the presence of beings not from its world. She didn't want me to watch when the eagle came the first time. But that's before she knew that I was the guardian. Would I be able to watch now?
Story nods.
But there'll be hundreds of people at a party. It won't work. See if there's anything else in there, Mr. Dury.
This word did give me great difficulty, and then it came to me. Sonorous. It could mean music, a band. Maybe we gather everyone inside at the last minute to hear a band, and we who are of the world stay with her to help her with that thing, and until she's taken.
He's a prophet.
We're all just seeing what we want.
No. Yeah. I think that it worked. That is why they're the guild. I think they're supposed to use their hands to throw us a party.
We're gonna throw a party.
Oh.
Huge party. We are serious. Anything you can do for us. Tables. We definitely need the most important thing. Oh my God.
Dusk. Story's lying on a sofa in Cleveland's cottage. Cleveland sits beside her.
You don't think this is gonna work, do you? I'm nervous, too. You being out there tomorrow night, me not knowing what to do as the guardian. Think I can go out there tonight and maybe face that thing without you? Get a little practice with him? Scare him, maybe? Show him who's boss? I know you want to get home.
Thoughtful, Story sits up and stares intensely at him.
You will need a mirror.
Can you hear me? I'm here.
Peer over your shoulder carefully. It is only through a mirror that one can see the eyes of a skrunt in the grass. It will appear to you as two red spots in the darkness.
Stories inside with a walkie-talkie.
Wait.
A red eye.
I see him.
The creature lies almost invisible in the grass, save for red eyes.
The Guardian has instincts of when this grunt will attack. He is a great weapon against him. You should walk backwards towards him. When you are close enough to be certain of his position, turn and face the hidden scrunt.
Standing in long grass, Cleveland slowly turns around.
I'm facing him.
I'm scared. It is about to get very dangerous.
Okay. I'm ready.
You must invoke the ancient words, Nephra Mora. It is a command to rise and a challenge to fight.
The sprinklers spray a fine mist around Cleveland.
Nephra Mora.
What is happening?
The scrunt begins to rise.
He's rising out of the grass. His legs are bending and coiling. Underneath him. Oh my God.
The scrunt's body looks part hyena, part wild boar.
He's standing in front of me.
The Guardian can hypnotize the scrunt. If the Guardian looks directly into the scrunt's eyes, it will be compelled to stay frozen or move backwards. What is the J.G. scrunt's reaction? Is he frightened?
I'm not sure.
Look into his eyes.
I am.
Is he moving away?
No.
The Guardian can control his mind. The J.G. scrunt will not be able to attack.
Okay.
You must look into his eyes.
I think something's wrong. He's stepping forward? Something's wrong!
The scrunt bares its wolf-like teeth.
Cleveland, run!
Her walkie-talkie goes dead. Outside, Mr. Farber stares at Cleveland.
What is it you are doing?
Cleveland's lying face down on the concrete by the pool.
Anything I can do for you there, Mr. Farber?
No.
Cleveland pushes himself up onto his knees, straightens, then stands up. He steps towards Farber.
So, how was the,
movie? Sucked.
Oh, what a shame.
Characters were walking around saying their thoughts out loud. Who does that? And a typical romance, where the couple finally tell each other they love one another in the rain. Why does everyone like to stand around and talk in the rain in movies?
Oh, maybe it's a metaphor for purification, starting anew.
No, it's not.
Are you okay? You'll choose to move only when no one is looking. They're masters of hiding. Scrunt will hide unless he cannot hide in his environment.
If a tenant hadn't walked by, I'd have been eaten alive. I had no powers over him.
You are not the Guardian. I do not understand.
She's lying on the sofa in Cleveland's cottage. He sits on the floor, leaning against it.
I cannot protect you. Where are the Tartunic? Why isn't he being punished? Where is the justice?
Outside, the scrunt with dark, matted, spiky hair, short, stubby legs, and a long snout creeps menacingly through the untamed grounds by the pool waiting. A notice, welcome the new guy from 13B, poolside party. Babies on the half tip tonight at 8 p.m.
How come you don't ask about bedtime story anymore?
Cleveland.
I've been busy.
Young Soon looks at him curiously. Cleveland gestures to the notice, which also reads all tenants invited.
You come another party tonight?
I have to study. Bye, Mr. Heat.
She turns and sashays away. Cleveland steps into the doorway of another apartment.
Mr. Leeds, did you hear about the party?
Mr. Leeds, who's surrounded by books, holds up a notice.
Oh, you coming?
Does man deserve to be saved, Mr. Heap?
What?
Man.
He's staring at Cleveland, waiting for an answer.
Yes.
That's not the answer I expected.
Why'd you ask me that?
I know about your family. I looked you up when you started working here. I know someone killed them. But you can't give up. You can't hide here, son.
I know.
You don't want to become like me. By the way, your invitation would sound more real if it had the guy's name on it. There's something strange going on around this building. Don't think I haven't noticed.
A gust of wind rustles through paper napkins on a long table laid for a party. Vic holds his manuscript in his arms.
It is finished.
Vic nods, stories in the shower cubicle.
You can see things in the future.
Some things.
I have a question to ask you.
I will do my best to answer it.
You'll tell me the truth, right?
Yes.
Change doesn't happen the way you say it's gonna happen, without dramatic events that accelerate thinking. I wrote this thing. It might take decades or longer to create a reaction before it anchors in the consciousness. That's not the type of change you tell me is gonna happen, right? I was wondering why he didn't meet me. This leader who's just a boy. If he was so inspired by my words, why didn't he try to meet me? There's a lot of things in the cookbook people won't like to hear. I'm not anything, you know. I don't think I'm anything special. So I started thinking, how is this gonna happen? Why are people gonna suddenly take me seriously? And why didn't he meet me? And I thought of how it could happen. The story I wanted to ask you, is something gonna happen to me? Someone gonna kill me because I write this?
Yes. Man thinks they're each alone in this world. It is not true. You are all connected. One act can one day affect all.
She leans against the cubicle wall, at the other side of which is Vic, Anna, with a tray.
What are you guys whispering about? Is he trying to get you to tell him how many kids he's gonna have? I told him 8, all bratty boys.
I asked her if she knew the name of the deaf, dumb, and blind guy that's gonna marry you.
Very funny, Herb.
Vic smiles and watches her leave the bathroom. Vic's smile fades and his expression saddens. He nods to himself.
Okay. Don't tell my sister.
Cleveland sits at a desk in his bedroom, furiously writing in his notebook. The swimming pool is shaped like a lopsided heart. The Cove's residents are dotted around it, and the party is in full swing. A smartly suited Mr. Farber looks around and nods with satisfaction. He gives a general wave to the uninterested crowd.
Hi, I'm Mr. Farber.
Two of the smokers stare at him blankly.
I wanted to thank you. I was completely surprised by all of this. I was expecting some kind of greeting, of course. But this is beyond my expectations. I'm 13B.
The smokers.
Oh, yeah, hey.
Good for you.
What's up?
Inside.
I know of your future, Cleveland. Do you want to hear it?
No. Tell me what happens when the eagle takes you back.
It's only what I have been told by others. They tell us the world will line up and reveal we are on the right path. That the universe will give us signs. The Tartutica have not come yet. I can still sense this grunt's presence near.
You have to believe that this all makes sense somehow.
Story sits up and leans towards him.
I don't know why I'm the Madame Narf. I'm not special. See, they make fun of me. I don't know how to lead.
Do you get sick every time you break a rule?
every time that you tell me something that you shouldn't.
She glances away.
There's a storm coming.
She leans her head a little closer to his.
I am scared.
It's okay to be scared.
I do not have courage. I do not want to be a Madame North.
You do what you think is right. You're very brave. You were always meant to lead, Story.
Story looks up suddenly.
Cleveland. The Great Edlon is coming.
Story's arms are draped around Cleveland's shoulders as he helps her out of the apartment towards the pool area. They're followed by Anna, Vic, Mrs. Bell and Mr. Dury. Colourful party balloons bob in clusters from railings. Anna makes her way through the crowd towards the grass verge. She holds her hand up to shield her eyes from the blinding light of a ground lamp as the sprinklers emit a hazy mist of water. Anna removes her cardigan, bends down and places it over the dazzling ground lamp. She rises and looks out over the stretch of long grass that leads to Cleveland's cottage, then turns her back to it and nods to someone in the crowd. She takes out a compact and begins to powder her face. She holds the compact mirror up to see the grass behind her, moves it about, then holds it still. Story's head rests against Cleveland's chest as he half carries her down to the edge of the pool. She looks down through the clear water to see the rectangular grill at the bottom, then touches the water with her foot. Cleveland nods to the smokers. They leave him. Cleveland takes Story's hand.
I'm glad you read my journal. Don't worry. We're all watching you.
He smiles and steps back and they reluctantly release one another's hands. Reggie stands on a balcony with a plate of food, watching the party around the pool. Cleveland stands facing the grass verge with two of the smoking gang. After a few moments, he turns round to one of them and nods. The dreadlocked smoker turns towards the crowd and waves to his friends in an apartment who are standing around with musical instruments. They don't respond. Cleveland swings round.
Oh, come on, the music should have started already.
He pats the two smokers.
Do not leave this spot.
Someone bumps into Anna.
Hey!
She's dropped the compact. She crouches down to look for it between the feet of the partygoers. Moments later, she appears before Vic and some of the other residents.
Find a mirror.
Reggie seems to have noticed something or someone in the crowd. He steps along a balcony, beadily watching. Cleveland hurries through the crowd. The two smokers abandon their positions at the grass verge and step towards one of their friends who's on his knees vomiting. In the semi-darkness, illuminated by distant balcony lights and a subdued ground lamp, something watches from the long grass, Story in clear view. Separated from the others, she wears a raincoat. Her long mane of auburn hair glows in the dusk. Suddenly, a balloon bursts. Heads turn. Something is racing towards Story. Cleveland steps towards a bearded smoker who helps him up onto the balcony.
Why hasn't the music started?
It's been working smooth. We've been playing with it all night.
A walkie-talkie.
You used up the battery. Wave to him.
The bearded smoker turns towards his friends in the apartment and waves, but fails to get their attention. There's still no response from the band.
They told her that the universe would line up and reveal that we're on the right path. Why isn't this working?
He glances towards the pool and stares transfixed at his clear view through the crowd at the sprinklers on the meadow. Story has vanished. Cleveland leaps over a sprinkler and races through the long grass after Story, whose pale, limp body is being dragged through the undergrowth. Story's finally released and lies slumped on the ground. Cleveland kneels over her.
Okay.
He gently lifts her up and, followed by the other residents, carries her into a room full of small lockers and lays her down. Story's hair has turned a flaxen gold. She's unconscious. Cleveland's anxious eyes meet Mrs. Bell's.
Sometimes animals just look dead.
Cleveland looks at the deep scratches on Story's legs. The bearded smoker.
Something went wrong. They took her inside, up by the pool.
His friend follows him up some steps out of the gloomy underground bin shed. An open door from it leads directly into the basement. It begins to slowly close. Before it closes, the scrunt darts into the basement. Mrs. Bell cradles Story in her arms.
It is not time for you to go. It is not time for you to go.
Mrs. Bell, eyes closed, touches the gashes on Story's legs, then looks up at Cleveland.
Isn't this supposed to work?
Cleveland turns anxiously to the other residents. Mr. Jury takes out his crossword.
14 across. No, no.
Mr. Jury frowns as he scribbles, then looks up helpless.
I don't know.
The smokers stand behind him.
This world is about finding your purpose, right? And the only way to do that is to find your own voice. You told us that. I don't feel like an interpreter. Is it possible that that isn't my purpose? I don't see anything in these words, and I didn't before. And finding one's purpose is a profound thing. Sometimes it isn't always what it seems.
He points to the smokers surrounding him.
What if these young men are not the guild? Look at what happened at the party. These things haven't seemed right from the beginning. Why are you so certain that I am the interpreter and they are the guild?
Everyone waits for Cleveland to answer.
He was so sure.
What?
I asked someone. He acted like he knew.
What kind of person would be so arrogant to presume to know the intention of another human being? Who has put this young girl's life in jeopardy?
Farber, holding a plastic cup in his hand, enters a corridor in the basement. He flicks a light switch.
Hello?
The scrunt is briefly illuminated as the light blows. Slightly tipsy, Farber steps forward and tries a door.
Is the bathroom on this level working?
He pauses.
A dog inside the building. Go! Shoo!
Farber stands his ground and peers into the semi-darkness.
Well, you're not a dog at all.
My God. This is like a moment from a horror movie.
He stares ahead.
It is precisely the moment where the mutation or beast will attempt to kill an unlikable side character. But in stories where there has been no prior cursing, nudity, killing, or death, such as in a family film, the unlikable character will narrowly escape his encounter and be referenced again later in the story, having learned valuable lessons. He may even be given a humorous moment to allow the audience to feel good about it. This is where I turn to run. You will leap for me. I will shut the door. And you will land a fraction of a second too late.
He turns his back, the scrunts upon him.
Why would they lie to her about Tartuttic? These cannot just be fairy tales that they tell to make the Norse risk their lives. This has got to be about faith.
Her world works by different rules than ours. She may not be dead.
We need to be told what to do. We need to find the interpreter.
But how are we suddenly going to realize someone's purpose?
This is someone who's doing something ancient, an ancient thing in modern times.
Right. It could be someone who sees purity in what we see as mundane, sees the voice of God in the ordinary.
He is someone who sees meaning in the ordinary.
Does anyone have any idea who this is?
Suddenly, Mr. Jury looks up.
My God.
Everyone turns to him.
I do.
There is a message.
Joey studying his shelves of cereal boxes.
There is a ceremony to be done.
You're doing great, Joey.
Shh. The hands of the guild will be needed, plus two others.
Joey, who is the guild?
It is a ceremony of seven sisters.
Sisters? The guild is women?
They will touch together with their hearts as one to bring strength to the moment.
Nice, Joey.
Shh.
The residents stand behind him.
You will need a man who has no secrets and one whose opinion is highly respected as witnesses. All must hurry. This will all be over in moments.
Vic and Anna are with Story in the locker room. The door's ajar. Vic looks back over his shoulder towards the open door. Frowning, he gets to his feet and walks tentatively into the corridor. He looks up and down it. Cleveland knocks on an apartment door.
Mr. Perez Della Torre. I need to speak with your... five daughters.
The smokers follow Mrs. Bubchick to her bathroom.
Honey? Honey, there's some people here to see you.
Young Soon goes to her door. In the Bubchicks...
Sweetheart?
To the smokers.
He's probably rinsing his mouth. He's got terrible breath. Don't tell him I told you.
She sighs and steps away from the bathroom door. The smokers step closer and lean forward, listening. As the toilet flushes, they step back and wait. The door is opened by a bald, bearded man in a pair of pyjamas. He looks astonished to see a crowd outside. Cleveland's with Mr. Leeds. They sit, leaning towards each other, deep in conversation. The TV plays behind them. Down in the basement, the laundry room is deserted. Some clothes rest in piles on a bench. A washing machine spins round and round with a red garment in it. Suddenly, the face of a wolfish beast is reflected in the glass window of the drum. Its red eyes glow. The glass temporarily frosts over, then becomes clear again. Drops of rain fall on the partygoers around the pool area. They look up, then hurry back inside, gathering in the ground floor apartment where the band have been waiting. The crowd gather around a platform.
I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more.
The remainder of the crowd are lured inside by the music and bad weather. Rain smatters the surface of the pool and lightning flashes across the sky.
I think we have everybody.
Mr. Bubchick and Mr. Leeds are now in the locker room.
A man who has no secrets. And one whose opinion I greatly respect. They will be witnesses. Will the guild please come forward?
The five Perez de la Torre sisters and Young Soon step forward.
Yeah.
To Anna.
And you make seven. Seven sisters.
Anna and Vic share a look. Anna steps forward to stand in line with the girls.
Yeah. Everything's right now.
The sisters form a circle with Mrs. Bell, who is still cradling Story on the floor.
Come back to us now. Come back to us now, honey. Come back to us.
Story doesn't respond and remains limp and unconscious. Anna breaks down.
I can't believe it.
This is crazy. This woman is probably dying as we're talking.
She needs to get to a hospital.
This is not right. We can't just stand here playing make-believe. I want her to believe more than most. I want to be like a child again. I need her to believe there's something more than this awfulness around us. But at some point, we have to stop.
Mr. Leeds, it is time to prove some stories are real.
I read it wrong.
Joey appears in the doorway with his father.
It was my first time. I thought it said she will lead a ceremony of seven sisters to bring strength to the moment. I looked at it again. It says he. He will lead a ceremony of seven sisters to bring strength to the moment.
Mrs. Bell is not the healer.
It said the healer could be a man.
But I saw a butterfly land right on her.
Butterfly? The bedtime story said butterflies are drawn to the healer.
But Mr. Heap, you brought that butterfly to me. It caught my eye as you walked over.
All eyes are on Cleveland.
I did?
Oh, wow.
Oh. Wait, no.
You must try.
There's no time.
I can't.
Shut up. And try.
Mr. Leeds stares at him sternly. A resigned Cleveland steps forward and kneels down beside Story and Mrs. Bell. He takes Story, the Narf, in his arms and holds her against his chest. The seven sisters are around him. Cleveland places his hand on the deep red wounds on Story's seemingly bloodless legs. The seven sisters reach out and lay a hand on his back. Cleveland stares ahead. Pain and emotion are etched across his kind face.
Say something to bring out your energy.
I'm sorry I couldn't protect you.
He rests his chin on Story's head.
Oh, I should have been there. I am always going to regret. Just not being there.
He closes his eyes and is overwhelmed by his memories.
I'll miss your faces. Oh, they remind me of God.
He rubs his face across Story's flaxen hair.
I'm so lost without you guys. I met this very nice lady, and her name is Story. And I think you would have liked her. I think she might be an angel. Because she has to go home.
As he speaks, the wounds on Story's legs fade to thin red lines.
I love you all. I love you all so much.
As his grief pours out, Story's wounds appear to melt away. Her translucent skin glows with warm life. Her legs move, and she is conscious once again. Eyes still closed, Cleveland's expression appears more at peace. Story, with brows and lashes now flaxen like her hair, sits up and smiles. Pale balcony lights shine out like subdued beacons from the cove. The sisters and Cleveland, armed with an assortment of kitchen and garden implements, stalk out towards the pool. Behind them, Story turns to Mr. Leeds, young Soon, Anna, Joey, and Mr. Bubchick.
Thank you for all you have done.
They smile and nod gently at her. Story, with her flaxen tresses hanging loosely down her back and wearing one of Cleveland's cream shirts, steps towards Vic, who stands alone.
Your sister will have seven children. You will see the first two.
Vic looks at her sadly and nods. Inside... the Scrunt darts round a corridor. The sisters are viewed holding their weapons aloft, walking by the pool, through the glass pane of a door. The Scrunt's werewolf reflection is just visible in the glass. Red eyes blaze. The Scrunt paws and scratches relentlessly at the door. Outside in the pouring rain, the sisters have lined up along the grassy verge surrounding the pool. They're facing the unkempt meadow of long grass. Story stands with Cleveland, who's watching the sky. The door rattles until the lock breaks. The door falls open. Outside, the porch leads down some steps to the pool. Soaked to the skin, Story stands absolutely still, listening. She faces Cleveland, who's got his back to the apartment building. The Grant darts swiftly towards them. Story's eyes widen as she peers over Cleveland's shoulder. Cleveland, with rain-smeared spectacles, notices her reaction and turns slowly around to see the odious Scrunt. The creature stands only a few feet from him, ready to pounce. Cleveland sinks slowly to the ground and picks up a swimming pool leaf rake. The Scrunt bears pointed teeth and has a long snout, a broad back, and a long swishing tail. The Scrunt stands its ground but doesn't advance. A terrified Cleveland stares at it as the creature paws the ground. Cleveland slowly turns his head round and looks behind him.
Oh my God! He's the guardian!
Reggie! 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 Just keep looking in his eyes! Keep looking in his eyes!
An unflinching Reggie is standing behind them, staring at the Scrunt. He drops his plate of food. A flash of lightning illuminates the cove sign on the apartment building. The Scrunt takes a step backwards as Reggie slowly steps towards it, holding a long pole in his hands. The Scrunt reaches the grass verge. Suddenly, far up in the dark clouds, the great Eatland sweeps across the threatening sky. Reggie looks up at it. As the Scrunt moves in on Reggie, a creature leaps from the trees behind the meadow and grasps hold of it. Reggie drops to the ground in shock. A second beast springs from the trees down onto the Scrunt, and then a third. The Tartutic, three huge primatesque creatures with pointed fangs and covered in spiky grass and tree roots. Reggie cowers in the grass as the Tartutic beat at the Scrunt with their paws, pounding it into the ground. The great Eatland sweeps down, flapping its wings. The Tartutic drag the Scrunt through the grass and into the cover of the trees. As they disappear, so does a ghostly mist evaporate with them. Reggie rises to his feet. Cleveland and Story hold one another's hands, locked in a gaze. Cleveland laughs with relief and joy. He strokes Story's wet hair, then embraces her. She wraps her arms around him.
Thank you for saving my life.
Story squeezes him tightly to her. Story steps back. Then the shadow of a huge bird hovers over the water's surface. As the bird departs, Cleveland is left standing alone at the edge of the pool. Shrouded in the gentle mist of the sprinklers, the other residents are gazing up in absolute awe. The five Perez de la Torre sisters stand together. Young Soon stands beside Mr. Bubchick and Joey. Big is with Anna. The pool ripples. The great Eatland, with its mighty wingspan, soars above the twinkling lights on the ground. It glides through the wisps of grey cloud and climbs up into the heavens. Cleveland, reflected in the water, stands alone, watching them until they disappear. The screen fades to black. ITFC audio description by Aileen Downey, read by Mirren Delaney. Written, produced, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Produced by Sam Mercer. Director of Photography, Christopher Doyle, HKSC. Production designer, Martin Childs. Edited by Barbara Tulliver, ACE. Music by James Newton Howard. Casting by Douglas Abel. Costumes designed by Betsy Hyman. Creatures designed by Crash McGreery. Tiny white cave drawings on black of the Narf and her world accompany the cast list. Paul Giamatti, Bryce Dallas Howard, Bob Balaban, Jeffrey Wright, Sarita Chowdhury, Cindy Chung, Freddie Rodriguez, Bill Irwin, Jared Harris, Mary Beth Hurt, Joseph D. Reitman, Tova Feldshuh, an M. Night Shyamalan film. Unit Production Managers Sharon Mann, S.L. Mercer, First Assistant Director, John Rusk. Second Assistant Director, Basti van der Woude. Music Supervisor, Susan Jacobs. Second Unit Director, Brick Mason. The cast. Cleveland Heap, Paul Giamatti. Story, Bryce Dallas Howard. Mr. Jury, Jeffrey Wright. Harry Farber, Bob Balaban. Anne Aran, Sarita Chowdhury. Young Soon Choi, Cindy Chung. Vic Ran, M. Night Shyamalan. Reggie, Freddie Rodriguez. Mr. Leeds, Bill Irwin. Mrs. Bell, Mary Beth Hurt. Joey Dury, Noah Gray Caby. Longhead Smoker, Joseph D. Reitman. Goatee Smoker, Jared Harris. Emaciated Smoker, Grant Monaghan. One Eyebrow Smoker, John Boyd. Glasses Smoker, Ethan Conn. Mrs. Choi, June Kyoko Liu. Mrs. Bubchick, Tova Feldshuh. Mr. Bubchick, Tom Marderosian. Perez de la Torre Sister 1, Mary Cruz Hernandez. Perez de la Torre Sister 2, Carla Jimenez. Perez de la Torre Sister 3, Natasha Perez. Perez de la Torre Sister 4, Monique Gabriela Kernan. Perez de la Torre Sister 5, Marilyn Torres. Mr. Perez de la Torre, George Bass. Pool Guy, Joel Marsh Garland. SPCA Guy, James Jimbo Breen. Phone Message, Nell Johnson. Silvertide Band Members, Walter Lafty, Mark Melchior Jr., Kevin Frank, Brian Weaver, Nick Perry. Tartutic 1, Jeremy Howard. Tartutic 2, Brian Steele. Tartutic 3, Kurt Carley. Tartutic 4, Doug Jones. Stunt Coordinator, Jeff Haberstad. Underwater Stunt Coordinator, Lee Waddell. Music, El Cayuco, written by Tito Puente, performed by Mambo All-Stars. Fire, written by Willie Beck, Leroy Bonner, Marshall Jones, Ralph Middlebrooks, Clarence Satchel, James L. Williams and Marvin R. Pierce, performed by Sly and Robbie. Tangled Up in Blue, written and performed by Bob Dylan. Gates of Eden, written and performed by Bob Dylan. Wen Wo, written by James Wong and Michael Lai, performed by Josephine Shao Fong Fong. I'm Getting Sentimental Over You, written by George Bassman and Ned Washington, performed by the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. Secret Love, written by Sammy Fain and Paul Francis Webster, performed by Doris Day. Bomb Bomb Bomb, written by Lillian Berlin, Eve Berlin and Bosch Berlin, performed by Living Things. Passion, written and performed by Duncan Bridgman, Jamie Catto and Michael Franti. Soul Love, written and performed by David Bowie. Every Grain of Sand, written by Bob Dylan, performed by Amanda Ghost. Flowers, written by Miho Hattori and Yuka Honda, performed by Sibo Matto. Spoon, written by Miho Hattori, Yuka Honda, performed by Sibo Matto. Maggie's Farm, written by Bob Dylan, performed by Silvertide. Times They Are A-Changin', written by Bob Dylan, performed by A Whisper in the Noise. This motion picture, copyright 2006, Warner Brothers Entertainment Incorporated. Story and screenplay, copyright 2006, Warner Brothers Entertainment Incorporated. Original score, copyright 2006, Warner Barham Music, LLC. All material is protected by copyright laws of the United States and all countries throughout the world. All rights reserved. Country of first publication, United States of America. Warner Brothers is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or copying of this film or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and will subject the infringer to severe civil and criminal penalties. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. To my daughters, I'll tell you this story one more time. But then go to bed. A Cloud Shield logo, distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company. www.warnerbros.com.